A father, a Sunday morning fire, a vanished suspect. On April 10, 2001, Scottsdale, Arizona, awoke to a home engulfed in flames. As the bodies of Mary Fisher and her two children lay cold and lifeless, their throats had been slashed, Mary shot in the back of the head. The blaze was later revealed to be a carefully planned arson, rigged with a gas line, timed to explode after the killer's escape. And that killer, his name is Robert William Fisher, the only suspect who disappeared without a trace. The FBI once placed him on its 10 most wanted list. Decades later, he remains a phantom. Alive, dead, hidden, or living under a new identity. What drove a seemingly devoted family man to destroy his own? And where could he be now? So if you think you've heard it all, you haven't. Hit follow on your favorite platform and leave us a comment, because the next story might just change the way you see everything. Don't miss a single twisted turn. Chapter 1. The Setup. The family man with a deadly secret. To the outside world, Robert William Fisher was the model of American stability, a clean-cut Navy veteran, a family man, a devout Christian, a suburban father raising two children in Scottsdale, Arizona. But beneath the surface, a darker truth was boiling, one built on control, fear, and buried rage. Robert was born on April 13, 1961, in Brooklyn, New York, but spent most of his life in Arizona after his parents' bitter divorce. Those closest to him said that divorce marked him deeply. He never forgave his mother for leaving, and he swore that his own marriage would never end the same way. That promise, in hindsight, would become a warning. Fisher joined the U.S. Navy, where he tried out for the SEALs, but never completed the program due to a back injury. After his service, he worked a series of high-pressure jobs, first as a firefighter, then as a surgical technician, and later as a respiratory therapist at the Mayo Clinic in Scottsdale. By 1987, he had married Mary Cooper, and the couple settled into a modest ranch-style home in a quiet suburban neighborhood. They had two children, Brittany, born in 1989, and Bobby Jr., born in 1991. On the surface, the Fishers lived the American dream. Robert was seen mowing his lawn every Saturday. The family attended Scottsdale Baptist Church regularly. Mary was involved in the kids' school activities, and the children were known to be well-mannered and bright. But those who knew the family closely began to notice cracks in the perfect facade. Robert was rigid, authoritarian. He controlled everything, from how the furniture was arranged to what shows the kids could watch. Mary wasn't allowed to decorate the house freely. There were few family photos on the walls, and Robert enforced his belief that the family unit must be led by the man. Even minor disagreements with his wife or children could trigger explosive outbursts. But behind closed doors, the rage went deeper. Friends described Mary as quiet, almost withdrawn. She'd often arrive at social gatherings alone, and when asked about Robert, she would simply smile and change the subject. Neighbors recalled hearing yelling from inside the house. Not arguments, but one-sided tirades. Robert yelling, Mary crying. Once a neighbor heard glass shatter, and then silence. Another time, a dog was found dead behind the house. Robert claimed it had attacked the children. Some suspected it hadn't. Mary eventually reached her breaking point. In 1998, after over a decade of emotional control and suspected infidelity, she insisted the couple see a marriage counselor. Robert was furious, not because of the counseling, but because of what it symbolized, a crack in his authority. He eventually admitted to an affair, claimed he had repented, and threatened to kill himself if Mary ever left him. For a time, it seemed he was trying to change. He returned home with religious pamphlets and Bible verses scribbled on index cards, but friends sensed it was all performative. Nothing changed, except for how tightly he held the reins. By early 2001, Mary was ready to leave him for good. She'd reportedly told friends that she was quietly preparing to file for divorce, but divorce to Robert meant humiliation. It meant becoming his father, and more than anything, he swore he'd never be like the man who abandoned him. The pressure was mounting. On April 9, 2001, the day before everything unraveled, Robert ran errands as if nothing was wrong. He smiled at co-workers. He attended his children's swim class. That night, around 10 p.m., neighbors heard raised voices from inside the Fisher home. Some described it as a violent argument, But no one called the police. In suburban America, people mind their business. At approximately 10:43 p.m., surveillance cameras at a nearby ATM captured Robert withdrawing $280. He was alone, calm, wearing a baseball cap. In the background of the video, Mary's Toyota 4Runner sat parked in the lot. That would be the last confirmed sighting of Robert William Fisher. By morning, the entire neighborhood would be rocked by a deafening explosion. A blast so powerful, it shook homes blocks away. Flames engulfed the Fisher home. And inside the rubble, the charred remains of Mary, Brittany, and Bobby Jr. told a gruesome story. Their lives had ended not in the fire, but before it. Execution style. As first responders dug through the debris, one thing became terrifyingly clear. This wasn't a gas leak. It wasn't an accident. It was a cover-up, timed, deliberate, and cold. And Robert Fisher was gone. Chapter 2. Escalation, a fire meant to bury the truth. April 10, 2001, began in chaos. At 8:42 a.m., a massive explosion rocked North 74th Place in Scottsdale, Arizona. Flames burst from the Fisher home, sending black smoke into the sky. Neighbors thought it was a gas leak, until they saw the way the fire consumed everything at once, as if it had been waiting for the perfect moment to ignite. Firefighters arrived within minutes, but it was already too late. The house had been rigged to burn fast and hot. As the flames died and the ash settled, investigators began sifting through the wreckage. In the master bedroom, they found the bodies of Mary, Brittany, and Bobby Jr. Mary had been shot in the back of the head. The children had their throats slit. None of them had died in the fire. They had been murdered. The gas explosion was not an accident. Someone had deliberately severed the natural gas line from the home's furnace, allowing the house to fill with fumes overnight. A candle had been left burning in the living room. By morning, the accumulated gas ignited, just as planned. A precise delay. Enough time for the killer to vanish without a trace. Investigators immediately identified one person who wasn't in the house: Robert William Fisher. And suddenly, all eyes turned toward the missing father. Inside the burned remains of the house, clues pointed to a carefully constructed plan. The family dog Blue, a mixed-breed Labrador, was also missing. So was Mary's Toyota 4Runner. What kind of father slaughters his family, burns down the house, and takes the family dog with him? The question wasn't just where Fisher had gone, but how long he'd been planning it. In the days that followed, Robert was classified as a person of interest, and then as a suspect. Friends, co-workers, and neighbors were interviewed. One co-worker described Fisher as a man who kept score, never forgot a grudge, and often talked about how divorce was the ultimate betrayal. Others remembered unsettling details. Robert once told a friend, "Divorce is not an option. I'd rather be dead than divorced." Then came the most disturbing discovery. The argument heard on the night of April 9th wasn't the final moment of a failing marriage. It was, investigators believe, the sound of murder. What followed, Robert's 10:43 p.m. ATM withdrawal and the strategic ignition setup, all pointed to a chilling timeline. Robert had killed his family before midnight, driven away, and set a timer on their destruction. It was as though he had rehearsed it. On April 20, 2001, 10 days after the fire, Mary's SUV was found abandoned in Tonto National Forest, over 100 miles north of Scottsdale. Inside was Blue, the family dog, alive but hungry and anxious. Outside, searchers found footprints leading from the vehicle into the rugged wilderness, but they ended abruptly near a stream. No blood, no torn clothing, no body. Had he hiked out into the forest to die? Or had he staged the scene, just as he had with the house? The terrain of Tonto is unforgiving. Riddled with limestone caves, canyons, and hidden crevices, it's easy to get lost or disappear forever. Some experts believed Fisher had taken his own life in a remote cave. Others believed he had cached supplies ahead of time and escaped deeper into the wild. But the most compelling theory was darker: that he never intended to die at all. The FBI launched a nationwide manhunt. They traced his credit cards, financial records, and cell phone history. Nothing. His accounts were frozen, his digital footprint erased, as if he had simply vanished. Hundreds of tips poured in from across the country. A man in Canada looked like Fisher. another in Mexico fit his build. But every lead ended in disappointment. By June 2002, the FBI added Robert William Fisher to its 10 most wanted list. He joined the ranks of terrorists and serial killers. A $100,000 reward was offered for information leading to his capture. They emphasized he was considered armed and extremely dangerous. Still, years passed, with no confirmed sightings, but the search didn't stop. In the early 2010s, the case took a twist when a man was arrested in Canada who bore a striking resemblance to Fisher, right down to a scar on his lower back, matching the one Robert had from back surgery. Investigators rushed to compare fingerprints. The world held its breath, but the man wasn't Fisher, and just like that, hope deflated again. Then came the question that has haunted investigators for decades. How does a man, with no reported help, no digital trail, and a massive national spotlight on his face, simply vanish? To answer that, we must look at the psychological profile of Robert William Fisher. FBI profilers described him as highly narcissistic, survivalist, and deeply controlling. He possessed military training, a fierce distrust of outsiders, and a hatred for humiliation. He hunted. He camped. He knew how to live off the land. He even knew how to fake normalcy, up until the moment he burned everything to ash. He had likely studied other fugitives. He knew what not to do. Don't use your name, don't use banks, don't trust anyone. It wasn't far-fetched to believe he could survive, even thrive, off the grid. He could be working under a fake identity, living in small towns, always one step ahead of capture. Some believe he escaped across the border into Mexico or Canada before post-9/11 border controls tightened. Others suspect he may have had help from a religious community or former military contact. And some, including a growing number of armchair investigators, believe Robert Fisher never left Arizona at all. What if he's dead? What if his body lies in one of the unexplored caves of Tonto National Forest, animal scattered and unidentifiable? But there's a problem with that theory. He would have taken the dog with him. The dog was the only living being he spared, and when the dog was found alive, it suggested Robert left it behind intentionally, as if he wanted someone to find it, as if the dog were part of the plan. The SUV was never hidden. It was parked in plain sight, almost like a breadcrumb trail, almost like bait. So what was the real story? A man who cracked under pressure and vanished into the wild? Or a cold, calculated killer who built a narrative, then walked away from the ashes to start again? Chapter 3. Climax, the ghost who still haunts us. By 2003, 2 years after the murders, the manhunt for Robert William Fisher had reached a fever pitch. His face was everywhere, on post office walls, news bulletins, and the FBI's official 10 most wanted list. But Fisher himself had become a ghost. Authorities followed up on over 1,000 tips. Some came from people convinced they'd seen him at gas stations, construction sites, even church gatherings. But every lead fizzled. Despite having one of the most recognizable faces in America, Robert Fisher seemed to move in the one direction law enforcement couldn't track. Silence. And yet, the evidence left behind still screamed. The murders weren't an explosion of spontaneous violence. They were intentional, mechanical, premeditated. Fisher had cut the gas line with surgical precision. He had set the candle to create a delayed detonation. He even rolled his wife's SUV over to the ATM hours before the fire to stage a false timeline. This wasn't a man who snapped. This was a man who planned. But for what? As the years passed, the FBI developed a psychological profile that painted an increasingly chilling portrait. Fisher was, by all accounts, a man obsessed with control. He hated weakness. He believed in strict, binary definitions of family and masculinity. When Mary threatened divorce, she wasn't just leaving, she was challenging his identity. To Fisher, divorce wasn't loss. It was annihilation. And so, he responded in kind. The prevailing theory remains that Fisher murdered his family sometime between 9:30 and 10:30 p.m. on April 9, 2001, after a heated argument. He shot Mary in the back of the head, then turned to his children. Whether they were asleep or awake is still debated. What's not debated is the method. Their throats were slit. The brutality was clinical, detached, personal. After the murders, Fisher began setting the stage for his disappearance. He used Mary's forerunner, to withdraw $280 from an ATM, money he may have believed he'd need for the road ahead. Then, back at the house, he lit the candle and left the dog behind. Not harmed, not caged, just left. A twisted goodbye gift. The fire would erase the scene. The explosion would sever the timeline, and he would vanish into myth. In 2016, the FBI released digitally aged images of what Fisher might look like in his 50s. He'd likely changed his appearance, possibly grown a beard, dyed his hair, or even had surgery. They believed he could be working blue-collar jobs under an alias, perhaps in a remote town, blending in. But there was no digital trail, no social security activity, no fingerprints. He was either a survivalist genius or long dead. Then in 2021, after 20 years of chasing shadows, the FBI quietly removed him from the top 10 most wanted list. Not because he was found, not because they'd stopped looking, but because the list had changed. Terrorism and cybercrime had pushed old-fashioned fugitives into the background. Still, the case wasn't closed. In 2024, a podcast titled Missing in Arizona reignited public obsession. The show uncovered new witness statements suggesting that Fisher's original timeline had been wrong. Neighbors claimed they saw Mary's SUV parked at the Fisher home as late as 5:30 a.m., hours after law enforcement believed he'd already fled. That subtle shift in the timeline changed everything. If Fisher left later than assumed, it gave him a much narrower escape window and made it less likely he traveled far. The podcast's team even re-examined satellite maps and thermal scans from the area surrounding Tonto National Forest. They found several unexplored cave systems, some too dangerous for previous search teams. The hosts offered a $10,000 reward and proposed a theory. Fisher might be closer than we think, possibly even buried within the forest that shielded his getaway. But not everyone agrees. Some believe Fisher made it out of the country before law enforcement could lock down the borders. In April 2001, international travel didn't require a passport for Americans to cross into Mexico or Canada. A man like Fisher, with his military training and survivalist mentality, could have easily slipped through. Maybe he changed his name, grew a beard, took cash-only jobs, became someone else entirely. Others believe he's hiding in plain sight. He could be a ranch hand in Utah, a handyman in Montana, a reclusive groundskeeper in the Deep South. There have been blurry photos, grainy footage, whispers of sightings in Alaska, Belize, Appalachia. Every few years, someone's sure they've seen him. None have panned out. Then there's the final, simplest possibility, one many law enforcement officials believe is most likely. He's dead. Perhaps he crawled into one of those desert caves and ended his life. Perhaps he was injured and never made it far. Perhaps his bones lie under a blanket of stone and silence, waiting for someone to stumble across them. But that theory leaves something unanswered. Robert Fisher was methodical, calculated. Every move he made was designed to obscure, confuse, and vanish. Leaving his wife's SUV and his dog in plain sight doesn't scream desperation. It suggests misdirection. Like a magician's final act, he wanted us to look there, while he slipped away somewhere else. So the mystery lives on. A man who murdered his family, burned the evidence, and stepped into the void. And the question remains, is Robert William Fisher dead? Or has he been living among us all this time? Until a body is found, a face is recognized, or someone breaks their silence, he will remain what he's been for over two decades. A phantom, a father, a fugitive, and a killer we still can't catch.